I'm going to go on to case number six, which is 022026, United States versus Thaddeus Drag. Come on up, Mr. Radicovich. I always feel like I'm the host of a game show when I say this.
I hope it's not the Gong Show, Your Honor.
No. American Idol.
Okay.
Go ahead. But the trap door will open if you go to the red light.
Or the vaudeville hook.
Exactly.
Okay. May it please the Honorable Court, Ms. Johnson. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I don't know that I've ever had a reasonable doubt argument in front of any appellate court, least of all this appellate court. And I understand and appreciate right from the outset the unusual nature of this argument, but would submit to this court that this is an unusual fact circumstance because, as we've indicated in our brief, and with the highest respect that we have for His Honor, the trial judge, there is no possible way for Mr. Drag to have been convicted but for believing Mr. Pointer, the government's key witness, beyond a reasonable doubt. And I don't know intellectually how we can have a witness who has lied repeatedly to law enforcement authorities, who has lied repeatedly to the U.S. Attorney's Office.
Yeah,
who has lied repeatedly, if you have a question, I'll stop, lied repeatedly in his own testimony in court.
Here's my problem. Judge Clore found Mr. Osher's testimony to be credible. And that is corroboration, according to Judge Clore's statement. So that it isn't just Mr. Pointer out there.
May I respond to that?
Please.
I think that the submit to the court that the corroboration of Mr. Osher, the so-called corroboration, is minimal. Mr. Osher talks about, in his testimony, having heard a 5 to at most 6-second conversation between Mr. Drag and Mr. Pointer, which was not heated, which was, in my own words, a matter-of-fact type of conversation, and something about Drag having a personal injury claim, which in fact he did. And Drag ultimately received his share of the check of his malpractice dram shop case of $15,413, and the check that Drag received from Glenbrook Life in this case was $18,963.65. In fact, the dram shop action carried under the Illinois statute a maximum recovery, the malpractice action, if you will, based upon the dram shop, a maximum of $30,000. To just do some very quick math, two-thirds of $30,000 is $20,000. The check from Glenbrook Life is $18,000. $963.65. Osher's.
Well, let me just stop there.
Yes, ma'am.
Are you suggesting your client didn't know who he had insurance with?
I would suggest that my client wouldn't know, wouldn't care whom the check comes from in terms of, don't forget, this is a legal malpractice action that he pursued on top of a dram shop.
So how do you deal with the phone records and the fact that he bought Pointer the motorcycle with the proceeds and then lied about what he had done with the money?
Your Honor, I don't know that the record shows that he bought a motorcycle for Pointer. Pointer went with Mr. Drag when they purchased the motorcycle. I don't believe that the record shows that Drag bought Pointer a motorcycle, and I believe Mr. Benoit was there as well. And then, if you will, if I can...
That was money that he didn't say anything about the motorcycle, spending the money on that when he was confronted about the proceeds.
No, this is true, and he was brought in at a proffer of financial transactions that had taken place sometime before, and there were some inaccuracies. That is correct. If
there
I
were two motorcycles that were purchased.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Were there two?
There was one purchased by Mr. Drag.
Well, there were two purchased that day.
That day.
And it was paid for by a check that Drag offered on it.
I don't recall Drag writing a check for Pointer's motorcycle. I mean, I don't recall that as a fact. If I can get back to the Your Honor's question about Osher, the record also would show that Osher's feelings were hurt when he later learned that a Pointer allegedly told him that he was going to loan Drag money so that Drag could pay this back, and Osher, who was, if you will, the guinea pig or the initial person in the scheme, in fact, his feelings were hurt that his lifelong friend, Mr. Pointer, would reimburse or would give a loan to Mr. Drag. If I could reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Of course.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Radakovich. And Ms. Johnson, good morning.
Good morning, Your Honor. Counsel, may it please the Court, Lila Johnson on behalf of the United States. As the Seventh Circuit has previously held, this Court must affirm a decision that is based on credibility determination unless such testimony is found to be incredible as a matter of law. Incredible as a matter of law has been held to be a person testifying to events that could not possibly have been observed by the witness or testifying to events that could not have occurred or contrary to the laws of nature. Neither is the case here. Pointer testified at trial regarding the big picture of what he testified to was that Drag had received a check from Pointer after they had had a conversation about this check and about what Drag was doing. Drag had testified that he was embezzling money from his insurance company by giving checks to his friends and having his friends cash those checks and then return portions of those checks to him. Pointer then gave a check to Drag in the amount of $18,963.65. Drag deposited the check and used the proceeds. The question here is, why is it that Pointer would just give a check to Drag and Drag know nothing about it? At trial, this question was posed, and Drag's trial counsel explained that Pointer was strictly just being Robin Hood. Based on all the evidence that was presented at trial, the court did not accept that explanation, and based on everything that has been said about Pointer, that was a very reasonable conclusion by the court. Counsel wants this court, to focus on the details. The fact that Pointer wasn't quite sure where he gave the check to Drag, or he wasn't sure how much money from the check he gave to Osher he received. These are details which were considered by the district court, but they fall far below the standard that is required of the Seventh Circuit to determine if the defendant's testimony was incredible as a matter of law.
But one of his big points is that Pointer repeatedly changed his, denied to the FBI, denied to everybody several times before stating that Drag knew.
That's true. And that is exactly what occurred. But Pointer's testimony at trial were sent to events that were certainly within the events that he observed, and his testimony at trial could not be considered to be contrary to the laws of nature. It's not contrary to the laws of nature that he spoke to Drag. They came to an agreement for Drag to illegally receive this check from Pointer's employer, and that Drag did in fact receive the check and cashed it.
What happened with the motorcycle transaction? Is there more than one motorcycle?
in total, there were three motorcycles purchased. There was one purchased by Drag, there was one purchased by Pointer, and there was one purchased by the other roommate, Benoit.
And they paid for their own?
For the evidence that we have, yes, Your Honor. We have no evidence that Drag paid for anyone else's motorcycle.
How much did the motorcycle cost?
I don't recall. I believe he didn't pay for it completely. I think he put down $5,000 or $10,000 and paid the rest off. Based on the evidence in our arguments in the government's brief, government respectfully requests that the judgment of the district court be affirmed.
Thank you, Ms. Jones. Mr. Radakovich? What? 5 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honors. First of all, and I know because have the highest regard for her character, professionalism, I think counsel misspoke inadvertently when she said that Drag testified that he
was
receiving.
Mr. Radakovich, forgive me. If there's 5 minutes, that light should not be on. I know, but you said 5 minutes. So that light goes on at 3.
Thank
Go
you.
Ahead. I'm
Thank
sorry.
When counsel early in her argument indicated that Drag testified that he was receiving checks from Allstate or Glenbrook Life, certainly Drag never testified that was Mr. Pointer. Counsel's argument then about why would Drag receive this check, it seems somewhat akin to a shifting of the burden of proof. Mr. Drag didn't testify. It's, of course, the government's burden throughout the case to prove their case. Counsel goes on to say that we want to focus on the details. When we're talking about the credibility of a witness, we certainly do wish to discuss details.
But our problem here is that in announcing the verdict, Judge Kaur explicitly noted Mr. Pointer's lies, his previous lies, his lying nature, and then said, but this testimony is credible. And how do we get past that? And no, Judge Kaur, not that. I mean, your burden is beyond monumental.
I understand that, and I do understand that, Your Honor, and I do appreciate that. And it's first for me to argue this position, but how do you take someone who habitually lies, and there is under no stretch of any imagination, this conviction must be based upon believing Sidney Pointer beyond a reasonable doubt. How do you not believe him, and he admitted that he lies. He lies on the stand. We're not talking about details. We're talking about whether he got a $2,000 cut or a $14,000 or
$15,000. I hate to interrupt, yes, but ma'am. If that was the only testimony, you would be golden. You would be golden. We could reverse in a second if that was all you had. But see, there's more. And that's what you seem to be not focusing on. There's more. There's corroboration for him.
In terms of the telephone calls, there is no showing here. In terms of the corroboration with telephone calls, which in his finding, Judge Kaur seemed to minimize the importance of it.
Right. But there was back and forth a lot on the phone. I mean, I understand it's not the top grade evidence, and you don't know what was said in the conversation, but it's kind of interesting that there were these multiple calls back and forth in the appropriate time frame, plus your guy in the lies. I mean, we've gone over it, so I don't need
yes,
to
ma'am.
Repeat myself.
In response to that, I just would remind the court that Sidney Pointer, Mark Osher, and Mr. Drag's friend and fellow police officer, Kyle Benoit, all shared that apartment. And there is no showing in this record of who was on the phone during those conversations. That the call was made from the Pointer Benoit Osher apartment to Mr. Drag, yes, ma'am. Who was on the call, we take issue with that. There is no showing who was. That's part of the corroboration. And the other corroboration with regard to Osher suggests to the court that minimal corroboration that cannot possibly then established beyond a reasonable doubt that Mr. Pointer, who turned on his lifelong friends right from the beginning, I mean, the first time he denied that the FBI agent, Agent Rivers, denied any involvement. But then very quickly, his attorney, Judge Garippo, indicated that Mr. Poynter wanted to come in and do the right thing. In the first session with the government, he implicates everybody but Drag. And then another time.
Were the other people police officers?
No, ma'am, but I would, in the same breath of answering that question, I would suggest to the court that that should not matter. It should be the same standard for police officers, for judges, for everybody.
Well, nobody's suggesting anything differently, but in terms of why your client might be motivated and the fact that he had this conversation with Poynter when they were discussing the check and the alibi the officer needed in case they were caught, I mean, that certainly explains why Poynter wouldn't identify Drag, who was a police officer.
I would respectfully...
I mean, the court could certainly infer that was why.
The court could infer whatever it wishes. I would suggest that this injury, though, and this cause of action that he had, a dram shop, which then turned into a legal malpractice, occurred well before the scheme, that Mr. Poynter received these 50 stitches from this... a bar altercation, and was pursuing a lawsuit at that time. There are no other questions?
Thank you, Mr.
Your Honor, thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Radicevich, and thank you, Ms. Johnson.